Hello and welcome to Little Africa News. My name is Mona Davids and I am the founder of Little Africa News and the New York Voice newspapers, as well as Real Talk with Mona Davids. Today's guest is Councilman Rafael Salamanca, our South Bronx councilman, who is running for Bronx Borough President. So I'm very, very excited about this interview and I want to dive right in. So Councilman Salamanca, welcome. Thank you for joining me today and for engaging our readers, our viewers, our communities. And please introduce yourself and share about yourself.
Thank you, Mona, for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here and speak a little bit about the work that my office has done in the last 9 years in the council. The work that we've done overall in South Bronx. So I've been in public service for the last 15 years. The first 6 years, I served this community as the district manager for Bronx Community Board number 2, where I focused and I worked with my local community in Hunts Point and in the Longwood community on really addressing quality of life issues in the Hunts Point community. You know, addressing crime, addressing drug use, addressing the sex slave in the sex workers, actually, in Hunts Point, and really addressing the inequities when it comes to environmental justice, with the amount of truck traffic that we have coming in and out of the Hunts Point community. And in that time, as a district manager, I can say that I thought I had the best job in the world. You know, I also served as the president of the 401 Precinct Council. I really got engaged at a really hyperactive level in addressing those quality of life issues in the South Bronx. And we were successful. We were able to tackle and address businesses that were not good for our community and were promoting crime. Fast forward 6 years after that, in 2016, there was an opening for the New York City Council. And I ran and my community believed in me and I was successful in that. And so I've been a council member for the last 9 years. And I can say this has been the greatest job that I've had, you know, to be able to represent a community that I'm born and raised in and I'm raising my family in has been the greatest honor of my life. You know, in the time that I've been in the council, I've been able to bring over $400 million to the South Bronx. $35 million to my public school systems, $30 million to my playgrounds, $20 million to my libraries. You know, I advocated and I was able to get the Hunts Point produce market $100 million of the $600 million that they needed so that they can redo the Hunts Point food market, the produce market, which is a major source for a food source for the entire city of New York. You know, my time in the council, I've been able to close two jails, a juvenile detention center called the Spofford Juvenile Detention Center that has been there for over 50 years, where in 2012, as a district manager, I worked with my community to close it. And in 2016, as a council member, I passed a land use application to have it rezoned for affordable housing and light manufacturing. We also have a floating jail in the Hunts Point community called the Barge.
Really?
The Vernon C. Bain Center. Yes, this jail, when Ed Koch was mayor, Rikers Island was overpopulated. And so he ordered three jails in the city of New York. And one of them came to Hunts Point. Well, fast forward, David Dinkins was mayor when that jail actually was built and brought over to Hunts Point. And David Dinkins at the time told the community that this was going to be a temporary thing until they reduce the population in Rikers. Well, 35 years later, that jail is still here. I don't think 35 years is a short period of time.
Yeah.
And so I've been able to advocate and working with the mayor. You know, he gave me his commitment that he was gonna shut down this floating jail and he kept his promise. We decommissioned that jail. There's no longer do they have detainees on that jail. And in June, we're gonna make an announcement where we're going, the plan is to have a barge boat barge that jail out of the water and give that land back to the community. And so, you know, I'm really proud of being able to be part of that. And, you know, being able to advocate for my community and ensuring that we got rid of these black eyes in our communities and basically giving that land back to the community. My time in the council also, I focused on building housing. You know, I'm proud to say that I've approved over 10,000 units of 100% affordable housing for residents in the South Bronx. I've built more housing than 21 council members combined, as per the New York City Housing Conference, a study that they currently made. And so, you know, I decided to run for Bronx Borough President because the Bronx, in essence, needs a manager, needs someone that understands the issues that is happening in our communities. The Bronx needs someone with common sense that will fight for them. And finally, the Bronx needs someone that will deliver for them. And I feel that I've been able to deliver for the South Bronx in the last 9 years as a council member. And I want to take it up a notch and deliver for the entire borough of the Bronx.
Well, thank you. You know, housing is, it's a huge concern for Bronxites. And it's very encouraging to hear that you brought in so much housing to the Bronx. And, you know, Councilman, when we look at the outward migration in New York City, or rather in New York State, New York State is number one when it comes to outward migration. And then within New York State, New York City is number one when it comes to outward migration of families. And within New York City, what really surprised me, Councilman, is that the Bronx is the number one borough when it comes to outward migration in New York City. And that is really concerning, because what's that saying is that families are leaving the Bronx, whether it's because of affordable housing, whether it's because of education or other employment opportunities. The fact of the matter is, the last 3 years saw the largest exodus of Bronxites. So my question to you is, how do you plan on addressing it? Because, like, we cannot ignore that when it comes to the Bronx, we're the number one in outward migration with families leaving.
Yeah, there are many factors that are affecting the borough of the Bronx that are, quite frankly, Bronxites are saying, hey, let me move elsewhere. One, public safety has been a major issue in our communities. You know, I know that the administration is saying that the numbers have gone down in the city of New York when we're talking about crime. But the reality is, that's not how I feel when I leave my home. Mm-hmm. Or that's not how I feel when my son goes to school in the morning. You know, I worry for my son and my wife and my family when they leave. The fact that, you know, we have issues with individuals with this revolving door in our criminal justice system, where individuals are caught with a firearm and they're out the very next day and they feel that there are no consequences for their actions. And, you know, we're having an issue with shootings in the borough of the Bronx. You know, there's going to be a 3-year anniversary for the death of a young lady named Kiara Tay, who was, I believe, 11 years old at the time when, in May, 3 years ago, she was going to a nail salon with her aunt. And there was a 14-year-old trying to shoot another 14-year-old while an 18-year-old was riding him on a scooter. And he was just shooting his gun wildly, and he struck an innocent young girl. You know, and that's the fear of every parent and every person when their home and their families leave, you know. And so that's crime is one of the, and our criminal justice laws is one of the reasons why families are leaving the borough of the Bronx. Another reason, I'll give you another example, you know, our property our property in our communities, our personal properties is being destroyed, and individuals are getting caught and they're not being prosecuted, you know. I'm pretty sure that everyone that has a car, when they leave their home in the morning or in the evening and they go to get in their car, their fear is that their tires are going to be missing or that their mirrors are going to be missing. And, you know, in the front page The Daily News a few weeks ago, the police commissioner was stating that in the borough of the Bronx, they're not prosecuting those individuals that are committing these crimes. And so, it feels as if there are no consequences for those individuals that are really hurting our communities. Another issue, which I know that we're all suffering from, is the increase of food, the increase of rents. Our, you know, everything is so expensive in the city of New York, especially in the borough of the Bronx. And so many families have to choose, are we going to eat healthy? Am I going to pay the rent? Am I going to be able to purchase clothing for my kids living in this system in New York City and in the borough of the Bronx? So they're choosing to move to other states where it's much cheaper and it's much safer. And I think that that's one of the issues that we need to address here in the city and in the borough of the Bronx.
Yes, I completely agree with you that these are very huge concerns for Bronx families, and definitely has impacted Bronxites greatly. And we're hoping that with what's going on with Albany, that we'll have some reforms to these criminal justice reforms. I wanna pivot and just talk about what you brought up, which is the perception of crime. So yes, we're hearing that New York City is one of the safest cities in the world, which is very nice to hear. But the perception, families are afraid. We're very concerned about our young people, our youth, and as Bronx Borough presidents, what are some initiatives that you may have in mind? How do you plan on addressing this problem with youth violence, gun violence? I know that the office is a bit limited, but there are still quite a few things that you can do as Bronx Borough President. So how do you plan on engaging our youth and trying to keep them off the streets?
So one of the major crime indicators that we have in this borough is youth on youth crime. And the reality is that we need to come up with bold solutions on keeping our adolescents and our young adults safe, entertained, with something to do, they really want opportunities where they can have some type of employment, even though they may still be going to school, where they can put money in their pockets. And I think that what we need to do is, I know that we have community youth centers. We have the Hunts Point Rec Center. We have the Boys and Girls Club that is run by Common Point, which I want to speak a little bit about the work that they're doing. And I think that there's a vision, but there has to be resources in every community, right? Accessible down the block, where our adolescents can go entertain themselves either through sports, or now with technology, AI, educating them on AI. Many of them want to be entrepreneurs. Many of them want to be musicians. Well, build music studios for them free of charge, where they can go and they can practice their craft. I know there's a school, I believe it's CS55, Dr. Luis Torres. He just installed a small music studio in his school for his students to practice that craft. But I think giving our students options, in terms of alternative ways of employment. Not many of them want to go to college. Let's be honest, right? College is not for everyone. It wasn't for me, to say the least. And so figuring out vocational programs where they can get their OSHA 30 free of charge, if they want to work with their hands and in construction, get them these skills and connecting them with labor so that they can get internships and get into these good paying jobs that these construction jobs have. Offering, as I mentioned, technology. AI is so key here. Creating stem cells with technology where they can learn their craft. You know, these are ideas that as the borough president, I will have as in a small round table with minds that are focused on youth development, and also sitting down with the adolescents and asking them, what do you want? How can we get you off the streets? Mm-hmm. What can we do? What programs can we offer you that will keep you entertained and out of these streets? And I think that that's something that I commit to the borough of the Bronx that I will focus on, one of many things. But my priority would be the development of our young adults and how we get them off the streets and into a positive pathway.
That's good to know. You know, as borough president, the borough president usually has a few different advisory councils. So there's the African Advisory Council. I think there's a clergy advisory council. Like there are a few advisory councils. Would you consider having something like a youth advisory council that, you know, your team and your office could engage with so that the youth actually have a seat at the table?
I believe that there is, the BP's office has an advisory council. Well, I hear her speak on it. I don't have much information on it, but the reality is that we need to take that advisory council if it actually exists, and we need to ensure that every community has a voice in terms of that advisory council. You know, I think that at the moment right now, the way the law is written, there's a few things. How mm-hmm. we have passed laws to try to bring in the adolescents, right?
Yes.
We are now taking applications for the last couple of years for 16 and 17-year-olds to join their local community boards. We need to do better. Not many adolescents are applying. And in talking mm-hmm. to the adolescents, you know, and explain to them, well, why are you not applying? Mm-hmm. They don't consider it interesting. And so we as leaders need to make it interesting for them. Letting them know that being part of a community board, you have a voice, you have a vote. That vote is power, you know? And I always give them the example. Someone may want to come and apply for a liquor license. They may own a restaurant. They may want to apply for a liquor license. Well, every 2 years, they have to go to the local community board and you have to vote for it. Imagine if it's split and you are the deciding vote of a 16 or 17 year old, if that person gets a liquor license. That's called power, you know? Yeah. And so we need to come up with creative ways on how to make these resources or these programs or these community boards fun and, you know, for them so that they can understand that their voice actually has a purpose. And their voice actually matters in our communities. Something that I strongly believe in, and I know that something that we need is that we need to engage our community boards to help us, because they're the ones. There are 12 community boards in the borough of the Bronx, mm-hmm. right? Yes, they have their committees, but if we give the community boards the resources and we give them guidance and we help them and we partner them with local not-for-profits that actually get youth development money, we partner them with programs and we partner them with schools, we can create activities where we can help these adolescents, number one, grow, but actually we want to hear what they have to say, how we can better improve their lives. And I think that we're lacking that, and we as leaders must improve on that.
Now, I agree with you, and that's a great way to engage our youth, explaining to them, you know, the type of power that they could have on a community board. But, you know, putting aside our youth, when it comes to community boards, even with adults, you know, there seems to be, or there has been for the last couple of years, an issue with getting people to join the community boards. You know, a lot of community boards have had vacancies. So, and what I keep hearing from people is because even the community board members feel that, you know, they're not being listened to, or, you know, their views or their opinions are not really being considered that decisions are already made. So how do you address that? Because we do need community members to join these boards. But if people are complaining that they don't want to join because their voices, even on the community board, are not really being heard, you know, what steps would you take to improve those types of relationships with our community board members so that we can fill these vacancies?
I can tell you, as a former community board member and as a former district manager of community board too, there was nothing more than frustrated me than when a city agency would come in to our office, make a presentation, tell us what they're going to do, and we would give them advice. We would give them letters of recommendations as to how we would want them to proceed, and they still went and did what they wanted to do. And that really grind my gears. And when I went on and I went to the community, when I got to the New York City Council, I can tell you that every city agency that came and I was sitting in that committee, I let them know the experiences that I had as a district manager, a community board, and how their agency did not listen to us. And I asked them, how are you going to change? How are you going to improve that? I didn't let it go. I continue to hammer down that message. Something that I've done in my communities is that, you know, 98% of the time, I side with my local community board on the issues. You know, there have been times that we just have not agreed, you know, and at times I think that, you know, when you're a leader, you know, you have to make bold decisions that ultimately will help the community, and you may not agree with other individuals. But I can tell you that 98% of the time I have taken my community board's recommendations, and I've taken them all the way to the top to ensure that their voices are heard. And I think that that's what's lacking here. We need to ensure Bronxites that their voices will be heard. And when we don't agree on ideas or philosophies, it's sitting down and having those tough conversations, but most importantly, coming with facts. You know, I can tell you, there was a situation in one of my community boards where it was appropriate for us to build housing. And we were going to do it with supportive housing for veterans. And, you know, when I talk about the 10,000 units that I've been able to approve throughout my district, I've always focused on low-income housing, mixed-income housing, because I believe in keeping families that are working in their communities, senior housing, and ensuring that we're also getting housing for homeless families. We have families in a homeless shelter that are ready for independent living, that are working families, working for the city. They just have bad luck. They may have had a fire. They may have had to move out for, you know, whatever, a domestic issue in their home. But they're looking for that opportunity to get into that apartment. And so going back to my example, veteran housing is something that I feel that we lack in our communities. And my example is that I approved a project where, you know, 60% of the units were going to be for veteran families. But certain individuals in the community wanted to twist it and make it seem as if they were it was a homeless shelter. But I came with facts, you know, I came with documents. I said that this is not a homeless shelter. We're building permanent housing for our residents who actually need housing. And so the point that I'm trying to make here is that we need to ensure that Bronxites' voices are going to be heard. And council members need to ensure that they need to listen to their communities when they're saying, hey, we're against this, and come back with facts if you don't agree with them. As a borough president, I know that borough presidents have limited powers, but one of the powers that they have is the oversight of community boards. And as a former district manager, I'm going to, number one, empower my district managers, ensure that they have the resources that they need and the facts that they need. So when city agencies are coming in to present to them, they are prepared with actual facts to defend their communities. That's the first thing I will do. Second thing I will do is that, you know, we need to look for a common sense, like-minded individuals to join our community boards. We don't want to, and in no way am I saying that I want to get rid of the experience that we have in our community boards, but we want to bring in also new ideas, individuals who want to improve the quality of life of our communities, which will have, you know, out-of-the-box thinking ideas that can help their local community. And so I'm extremely passionate about community boards. I believe in them. They're first level of government, and we need to ensure that they have the resources that they need so that they can thrive.
Thank you for that. I want to just pivot to small businesses. You know, during COVID, and I know that we had these conversations in the past, but during COVID, a lot of Bronx businesses went out of business for a number of reasons. But one of the biggest reasons was they were unable to apply for the loans, the small business loans, to keep them afloat. How are you going to support small businesses? Because these small businesses in our communities, they employ people from our communities, and it's small businesses that really drive the economy. So whether you're looking at Fordham Road, Third Avenue, you know, various business improvement districts, but how are you going to support small businesses as well as the various bids that we have?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. You know, just yesterday, I did a tour of the Gun Hill bid. I made my business to go visit the executive directors of the bids. I went yesterday to the Gun Hill. Not too long ago, I visited the 161st Street bid. I have two bids in my district, the Third Avenue bid, and the Southern Boulevard bid. I visited the Castle Hill bid, and there's another bid that I visited by Lehman High School, the Westchester Square. And I'm making my rounds. And, you know, as I'm visiting these bids, I'm hearing very similar issues, but I'm also hearing very unique issues. Many bids have their own unique issues. I can tell you that the very similar issue that I'm hearing is the over-enforcement of some of the city agencies on these businesses, such as sanitation, the Department of Health, consumer affairs. And so, you know, what we've done in our office is working with these city agencies. And instead of actually, you know, going out with enforcement, go out with an education phase where you're educating businesses on the laws that we have and how they can ensure that they're following the laws. And if they're not following those laws, we'll teach them as to how they can better improve so that, you know, we can eliminate those violations or those summonses that these city agencies will give them. I believe in the bids. I believe in the power of the business improvement districts. You know, I work closely with my two bids, the executive directors. I know that in Third Avenue, I'll give you an example. We have a huge opioid issue on 149th Street in Third Avenue. And the Third Avenue bid is at the forefront of working with the local not-for-profits in that area. And so to provide them with some type of support, my office has utilized the power of the budget, and we've allocated on a yearly basis. In the last 8 years, we've allocated over $5 million, and we created what's called the Opioid Collective, a partnership with the Third Avenue Bid and Acacia Network, where we're out there trying to convince the users to get them off the streets through a peer-on-peer program where former users are there, telling them, hey, I changed my life around. This is what I did. But many of them are choosing not to. So what we're doing is that we are ensuring that they're getting fed. We have a doctor to help them cure their any injuries that they may have and ensure that they have clothing there. But they're going out there on a daily basis trying to help them out. We've also provided programs where we have a needle pickup program to ensure that, you know, the syringes that are thrown out there on Third Avenue and 149th Street are being picked up. But ultimately, we've also partnered with the NYPD. NYPD has just created a quality of life division. They're focusing, I believe, on certain areas in the city of New York. And I advocated and I was able to get 149th Street and Third Avenue as part of that program for the quality of life issue. Now, that's unique to 149th Street and Third Avenue. When I was chatting with the Gun Hill bid yesterday, one of their issues is homelessness. There's a shelter not too far from there that's run by a not-for-profit. And it seems that the not-for-profit is really not communicating with the bid. And so my office is going to help build and that gap that they have, even though I don't represent that area. but I have a relationship with the not-for-profit. But ultimately, to help small businesses, we need to ensure that, number one, they know that there are grant opportunities and there are programs there and there are leaders in our communities that mm-hmm. want to see them succeed. And all they need to do is reach out to us. Say, I'm having an issue with this particular agency or this particular economic issue, and we can sit down and figure out how to address it. The borough president's office has what's called the Bronx Economic Development Corporation. And it's their responsibility to ensure that small businesses like chain stores and all other businesses have the same level of representation. And that's what I will promise my small businesses.
Wow, that's really good to know, because our small business owners, they do need support and they do need resources. So this will go a long way in supporting them. So, Councilman, just, you know, if you could just summarize what your vision is for the Bronx and how, as borough president, you know, some of the first steps that you would do to help improve the lives of Bronxites.
Yeah. Well, first thing I will do, you know, as a borough president, is there are many factors. You know, you have communities, as I'm door knocking throughout the borough of the Bronx, the issues up in Riverdale and in certain parts of Kingsbridge are not the same issues as they are in the South Bronx. The mm-hmm. issues at City Island and Morris Park are not the same issues that you have in the West Bronx. And so we will break up the borough of the Bronx in pieces. What my office is committed to do, number one, we're going to call a housing emergency, state of emergency in the borough of the Bronx, right? I will advocate what we normally do when they set the rents for these new units. It's called the average median income, where they're taking the AMI of the entire city, grouping it together. They're basically saying that everyone in the city of New York is making $97,000 a year, which is not true. You know, and so what I will advocate for is something called the local median income. As we're building housing, we should build housing for those immediate communities. And as we're setting the income for those immediate communities, we need to ensure that we're building housing for those rents of the people that actually live in that community. Something that I will envision and I will commit to is addressing public safety in our communities. You know, there's no reason why the borough president should not have a monthly meeting with the police commissioner with a laundry list of issues that need to be addressed in our communities. You know, yes, I will work with the commanding officer of the borough of the Bronx. Right now, it's Chief Gurdy, and I have a great relationship with him. But he needs help, too. He needs us as elected leaders to advocate for him and say, I need more cops. I need more funding so that I can install more August cameras throughout the borough of the Bronx so that we can catch those individuals that are committing crimes. I need more gun buyback programs in our community so that we can get these guns off the streets. And I also think that the NYPD, with the budget that they have, they can provide resources to help us build community centers so that we can get communities off the streets, working with the NYPD so that our adolescents know that NYPD officers are here to help us and build our communities together. That's something that I commit to. Now, many may say, well, Salamanca, how are you going to do that? How are you going to address this all on your own? Well, when I become the next Bronx Borough President, I will have multiple deputy borough presidents. And that is what I promise. And that is really out of the box thinking. I will have a deputy borough president that will focus on public safety. I will have a deputy borough president that will focus on economic development and housing. I will have a deputy borough president that will focus on youth development and our educational system. And I will have a deputy borough president that will focus on our seniors. And I think that if you bring in individuals and you hold them accountable and you give them a portfolio, I, as a manager, I will be able to manage the borough of the Bronx with the help of my multiple deputy borough presidents that I will bring online. And I think that is how you manage this borough. It would be any city hall, you know, but for the borough of the Bronx. And that is my commitment to Bronxites.
Okay, no, I love this deputy borough presidents, because with them having the portfolio, also the communities, small businesses, larger corporates would know that they can go and engage the deputy borough president for economic development. We'll know exactly who to go to. And that is so very important because dealing with red tape can be very, very frustrating, and not knowing who exactly is the person we need to speak with as small business owners is also quite frustrating. So this is great. This is good news, and I'm sure that it will be very much welcomed by small business owners. Councilman Salamanca, thank you for joining us today. I know that we'll be seeing you out on the campaign trail. Thank you for engaging our community. The African community in the Bronx, as you know, is a growing community. And for us as well, we care about our youth, we care about quality of life, we care about affordable housing. And many of us are small business owners. So it is very encouraging to hear what your next steps will be as borough president. So thank you very much, Councilman, for joining us today. And we hope you'll come back and meet with us again and share more of your vision for the Bronx.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. The African community, they play a pivotal role in the borough of the Bronx. They help us move this borough, through our economy, through our education, through their culture. And, as your next Bronx borough president, just know that you will have a partner here in Borough Hall when it comes to working hand in hand with the African community.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, take care.